Russia rejects the 10-point peace plan offered by Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky as fighting intensifies in parts of Ukraine. Palestinian resistance movement Hamas condemns Israel's seizure of an archaeological area south of Al-Quds, calling it a new crime aimed at Judaizing the occupied city. And the U.S. Supreme Court rules to keep in place, for now, a controversial pandemic-era border restriction order known as Title 42. Well, welcome to our studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is Mies. Thanks for joining us. Moscow has rejected a peace plan offered by Ukraine, saying it must include Kiev's recognition of the four regions annexed by Russia. The Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov said there can be no peace plan until Kiev takes into account what he called the realities of the four regions. He was referring to the regions of Donetsk, Luhansk, Kherson, and Zaporizhia that Russia annexed after a referendum vote in September. Ukrainian and its Western allies have rejected the referendum vote and Russia's new territorial claims. The Ukrainian peace plan includes the withdrawal of Russian troops from its land. This would mean that Moscow would have to give up the four regions as well as Crimea, which Russia also annexed through referendum in 2014. Kremlin has expressed its openness to peace talks with Ukraine, but says it sees no willingness from Kiev to negotiate. The UK is gearing up for more strikes as workers from various sectors express their frustration at low wages. Border force worker and railway staff have already gone on a strike, causing massive disruptions for passengers, shoppers, and commuters. Border force workers say that they will stay off the job until New Year's Eve. Military personnel and other civil servants are now having to cover for striking workers at airports. Nurses and ambulance drivers are also planning further industrial action in January. Workers are demanding higher pay in keeping with the country's soaring inflation. The UK's Prime Minister has already voiced his opposition to wage increases, saying that it will stoke inflation. The UK is witnessing a decades-high inflation rate, which has led to a cost-of-living crisis in the country. Britain's rollercoaster political year has wrapped up in a crest of strike action, a general cost-of-living crisis, and economic and political uncertainty. But, as Amina Taylor reminds us from London, the UK endured even more upheaval during 2022, including the death of a monarch and a seemingly revolving prime ministerial door at Downing Street.
Brits are still reeling from the impact of 2022. It's hard to recall a political year that's seen the country lurch from one crisis to the next, all bookended, it seems, by the saga of which particular Conservative Prime Minister was in charge. Boris Johnson had managed to cling on to power despite mounting evidence presented that his position had become untenable. His missteps during lockdown, dubbed Partygate, a faltering economy exacerbated by the outbreak of conflict in Ukraine, made his departure an inevitability. The race to replace him was brutal, exposing the deep divisions within the Conservatives. Party members chose Liz Truss over Sunak before, but that was only the beginning of the saga. Analyst Chris Bambury was following events closely and reflects on that period of chaos.
We had this strange interim where Liz Truss beat Sunak, clearly showing that a majority of the Conservative Party membership were not going to vote for Sunak for reasons which I think are fairly obvious, which I never really talked about. But Truss was a disaster. And then we ended up with Sunak being shoehorned into the Prime Ministership with no actual election.
I am resigning as leader of the Conservative Party.
Ah, the blink and you'll miss it Truss era. 7 weeks of chaos which saw the pound take a hit and the markets recoil at the sheer ineptitude on political display. There was a sense that the UK's political landscape had now become a running joke.
The chaos of the Liz Truss premiership, you know, was just awesome. I don't think we've ever seen anything like that in British politics. British politics is supposed to be about stability. It prides itself in selling itself, Britain, as a brand to the rest of the world, that has been politically stable. This was like Italian politics, you know, and prime ministers just coming and going. This did not give a vision of Britain as a stable political entity.
Not content with topsy-turvy politics, the UK's longest-serving monarch, Queen Elizabeth II, passed away aged 96, leaving the UK contemplating its colonial legacy. With King Charles III with Camilla, Queen Consort, by his side, it was a new era, but one filled with old uncertainties.
I shall strive to follow the inspiring example I have been set in upholding constitutional government and to seek the peace, harmony and prosperity of the peoples of these islands.
Despite the passing of the baton, the impact of Brexit, the stalemate in the north of Ireland, with the cost of living crisis biting, Prime Minister's in-tray was bulging. 2022 is also the year Britain saw a re-emergence of strike action across a multitude of sectors.
We have been reasonable, but it is impossible to find a negotiated settlement when the dead hand of the government is presiding over and blocking a resolution in these talks.
We are seeing the recovery of industrial unrest, workers taking trade union action, and finding that when they go on strike, they are popular, that people sympathise with them, sections of the working class and indeed the middle class. And I think that spells trouble ahead. These strikes, we haven't seen anything like this in Britain really since the days of Margaret Thatcher. This is new, and I think people are learning new habits, new skills of taking industrial disputes. And I think potentially this is a bit of a game changer down the road.
Rishi Sunak and the rest of his Conservative government will be desperately hoping that there is not a repeat of the past tumultuous year. A 12-month period that's seen record number of Brits slide into poverty. But analysts are warning that desperate changes need to happen because so far it seems the Tories are heavy on excuses and light on solutions. On the cusp of a new year, there are many challenges awaiting the average British family. Whoever is in charge in Downing Street, it's the most vulnerable who continue to pay the heaviest price. Without firm solutions from the political class, it seems the upcoming period might hold still more pain for those who can ill afford it. Amina Taylor, London.
Israel has decided to go ahead with its plan to excavate an archaeological site in the town of Silwan, south of the occupied Al-Quds, despite warnings from Palestinian resistance groups. An Israeli settlers organization known as the Zionist Association of Elad says that it has started carrying out excavations in Birkat al-Hamra. This is the area where the settlers discovered a tomb supposedly belonging to the midwife of Jesus Christ. The regime seized the historic site on Tuesday morning after raiding the area and assaulting residents in the neighborhood. Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has strongly condemned the seizure, calling it a new crime by Israeli settlers. The group says the move is aimed at Judaizing Al-Quds and expelling its original inhabitants. Hamas has also called on the Arab League and the Organization of Islamic Cooperation to take action against the latest Israeli violation. Iran has announced Washington's support for Israel. The foreign ministry spokesman says in the eyes of the U.S. and Europe, Israeli crimes against women and children are no violation of human rights and even deserve support. Nasser Kanani made the comments on his Twitter account. He attached a number of photos portraying Israeli crimes against Palestinians, including the killing and the detention of Palestinians and the demolition of their homes. He also gave a sense of the extent of Israeli crimes by quoting Palestinian officials. They say that this year alone, the Israeli regime has killed 220 Palestinians, injuring some 9,000 people, arrested 500, and destroyed over 800 homes. The figures come as the regime has intensified a crackdown on Palestinians in the past year, especially during the past several months. Millions of Iranians have taken part in nationwide funeral processions to bid farewell to 400 anonymous martyrs who lost their lives during the Iraqi-imposed war of the 1980s. Every now and then, Iran and Iraq exchange remains of soldiers recovered from the previous battlefields in borderland territories. Our correspondent Gisu Mishahmadi tells us more.
Caskets with the remains of unidentified martyrs draped in Iranian flags and carried in mass processions. For many Iranian families, the painful legacy of the eight-year Iran-Iraq war, referred to as the Sacred Defense, drags on after more than three decades as they hopefully wait for news of loved ones still missing.
The martyrdom anniversary of Hazrat Fatimeh, Lady Fatimeh, the daughter of Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, became the perfect occasion to bid farewell to 400 unknown soldiers of the eight-year Iraqi-imposed war.
In the capital, Tehran, the last farewell on Tuesday honored 200 soldiers whose remains were recently recovered from the former battlefields along the Iran-Iraq border. Funerals were held for another 200 soldiers in other cities and towns across Iran. None of the soldiers have been identified, and their remains are to be buried as unknown martyrs. We should never forget the martyrs, their families, and the sacrifices they made for us to be here today. And the occasion of Hazrat Fatima's martyrdom anniversary is the best reminder of that.
Iran has been the scene of foreign-backed riots since mid-September, and many who attended the funeral procession saw it as an opportunity to send a message to the enemies of the Islamic Republic.
I personally came here because I think that at this very crucial point in time, it is important for me and my generation to show support for the Islamic Republic of Iran, to show that the way mainstream media is trying to portray Iran these days is fake news, and that my generation will always uphold the values of those who lost their lives for the independence of our country.
We will walk down the same path as our martyrs. Our presence here is a clear message to all of our enemies and the rioters in particular.
We have pledged allegiance to our leader Ayatollah Khamenei, and no matter what happens, we will always support the leader. Especially these days, it is even more important to be vocal about it.
Trucks piled high with the caskets made their way through the streets. Men and women in black followed them weeping for those who lost their lives in a bloody war which left more than a million casualties on both sides. But most importantly, they turned out once again to pledge allegiance to the Islamic Republic of Iran. Gisumish Ahmadi, Tehran.
The Supreme Court in the U.S. has ruled to keep in place for now controversial pandemic-era border restriction order known as Title 42. It allows officials to expel migrants caught at the border with Mexico. The court accepted a petition by 19 Republican-ruled states that had warned of a surge of migrants if the policy was reversed, as per a lower court's ruling. The court said that it would hear arguments on whether the states could intervene to defend Title 42 in its February session. The ruling comes as thousands of migrants remain stranded at Mexico's northern border in the cold. The previous policy was due to end on December 21st, and a lower court judge had ruled to invalidate the emergency public health order. However, President Joe Biden has sided with the apex court, saying that his administration would heed the court's decision until a final ruling on the matter. Title 42 allows the U.S. to return migrants to Mexico or certain countries without looking into their request for asylum. A group of migrants represented by the American Civil Liberties Union had sued the U.S. government over the policy. They argued that the expulsions to Mexico exposed them to serious harms like kidnapping or assaults. Critics have branded the policy inhumane, saying that U.S. border policies had caused significant strain throughout the region. Gun violence is the leading cause of premature deaths in the U.S. Gun death rates have been in the highest in decades, and 2022 in particular has been one of the worst years. An American nonprofit group says over 6,000 children have been killed or injured so far this year across the U.S. as a result of gun violence.
The number of children shot and killed in the United States in 2022 exceeded 6,000. The Gun Violence Archive found that at least 6,032 children, 17 years of age and younger, had been the victims of America's deadly gun epidemic. The number was the highest since GVA started keeping a record of gun violence casualties in 2014. The figure reflected a notable increase since last year, when arbitrary deployment of firearms by civilians was found to be responsible for around 5,700 casualties across the country. At least 306 children, 11 years old or younger, have been killed by gunfire, with 668 being injured. Additionally, 1,325 teenagers aged 12 to 17 died by gunfire, with 3,732 being injured. Last month, the GVA said there had been a total of 609 mass shootings in 2022 in the United States so far, putting the country on pace to reach around 675 by the end of the year. The grim statistics come after a 3-year-old girl in Kansas City, Missouri, was killed on Christmas Eve in what police suspect was an accidental shooting. The child shooting deaths in 2022 also include 19 students, all 11 years old or younger, killed in a mass shooting on May 24th at an elementary school in Uvalde, Texas. One of the youngest victims killed by gunfire this year was a 5-month-old who was shot in the head while sitting in a car in Chicago during a June 24th drive-by shooting. The United States has been suffering from an expanding trend of gun violence and episodes of mass shootings. In July, U.S. President Joe Biden said that a flood of guns was turning American communities into killing fields.
According to new data just released by the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, guns are the number one killer of children in the United States of America. The number one killer. More than car accidents, more than cancer. Over the last two decades, more school-age children have died from guns than on-duty police officers and active-duty military combined. Think about that. More kids than on-duty cops killed by guns. More kids than soldiers killed by guns. For God's sake, how much more carnage are we willing to accept?
In October, the CDC released data on U.S. firearm deaths last year, counting over 47,000, the most in at least 40 years.
The United States is grappling with the aftermath of the devastating winter storm that hit the country over the Christmas weekend. The so-called blizzard of the century continues to inflict misery on New York State, which has been hit the hardest. Officials say New York's city of Buffalo now resembles a war zone. More than 60 people have lost their lives in the monster storm, and the toll is expected to rise. The Arctic blast also caused power outages and temporary closure of some of the busiest transport routes in the country. Over the past days, thousands of flights have been canceled and delayed due to the weather conditions. Now officials are warning of the risk of floods once temperatures rise and snow and ice begin to melt. North Korean leader Kim Jong-un has unveiled new goals for the country's military for 2023 at a meeting of the ruling Workers' Party. Kim reviewed the newly created challenging situation on the Korean Peninsula and the border political landscapes. The North Korean leader set the direction for what he called anti-enemy struggle and goals for reinforcing defense power. Kim specified the principles of foreign affairs to protect sovereign rights and to defend national interests. Tensions have remained high on the Korean Peninsula this year. That is because of North Korea's repeated missile launches, as well as joint military drills by the neighboring South and the U.S. Pyongyang sees the drills as a rehearsal for an invasion. The other side is opposed to the North's missile tests. And that does it for this edition of World News. Bye-bye for now.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Bazaar.
Following the success of the first industrial park in 1890, more of these parks began mushrooming all over the world. Industrial zones are viewed as an effective way of increasing synergies between industrial activities through sharing resources. Furthermore, they drive commerce and business for greater economic stability among global and domestic participants. These days, industrial parks are key engines for economic growth and financial security.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Bazaar, the program that analyzes industries, markets, profits, and all sorts of things that connect us nationally and internationally. This week, we are going to explore Iran's industrial parks. We wanted to see how they are established and operated and who the major players are in this field. Plus, we will examine why industrial parks and estates are so important to the national economy. So, let's get started.
To become more familiar with industrial parks, we visited one on the outskirts of the capital city of Tehran. It was originally launched roughly 3 decades ago and has since grown into one of the most densely packed industrial zones of the province. Spanning some 260 hectares of land, this establishment is home to hundreds of producers active in several production fields. So how does this establishment work, and what makes industrial parks attractive to businesses? One answer is that these zones offer unique services that support investors and companies. However, one of the most important advantages is the large plots of land fitted with the necessary infrastructure for production and distribution. Each year, thousands of tons of products are produced here. Industrial parks also provide vast amounts of space to store goods, and some have their own airports and ground terminals for cargo distribution. But that's not all. Many industrial parks are also situated in economic zones, which offer numerous benefits to businesses while cutting some of their development costs. Additionally, there are other advantages to operating in industrial zones for manufacturers who are also exporters. These include softer customs regulations and certain tax exemptions, among others. As a result, exports from these areas have also contributed millions of dollars to the national economy.
Industrial zones are ideal catalysts for industrialization and economic development. They provide the infrastructure necessary for small and medium-sized enterprises to grow. These parks have emerged as the new super tonic for the unprecedented growth of urban business and commerce. But have you ever wondered how an industrial park is created? It's no easy task. Planning and launching one of these zones is considered an industry of its own.
We caught up with a holding company specializing in planning and developing industrial parks in Tehran province. We wanted to see how these establishments are shaped, executed, and launched. It all starts with targeting the appropriate plot of land. This holding purchases the necessary land, which sometimes can cover hundreds of hectares. This entity carries out its activities under the National Small Industries and Industrial Parks Organization. This organization is affiliated with the Ministry of Industry, Mining and Trade. So, the holding links various industries with government executive branches and helps remove barriers for manufacturing units. Plus, it connects investors to businesses while handling some of the government's bureaucratic processes for national and international investors. One of the main goals of creating these parks is to support local production and increase exports. Doing so will save the country millions on importing similar goods that can be domestically produced. At its core, an industrial park is a portion of a city or land zoned for industrial use rather than residential or commercial needs. These places can be home to a host of industries and might have oil refineries, power plants, ports, and so much more.
The parks serve another purpose too. They are also meant to protect the environment, as industrial parks collect factories and other manufacturing facilities in an area outside of town. Moreover, these zones foster technological learning and innovation while creating jobs. Plus, such sites provide intermediary support for institutions while promoting interdisciplinary networks.
Their activities support market expansion and reach by providing services to companies that help businesses stay relevant in the competitive market. For instance, this holding company has sponsored various national and international exhibitions where companies in industrial zones can participate. They offer dozens of types of services to small and medium-sized businesses both inside industrial parks and outside these zones. It might be interesting to know that nearly every province of Iran has at least one of these holding companies that establishes industrial parks. For example, the holding company for Tehran province has already established numerous estates and sites over the years, but its activities haven't stopped there. As part of its future vision, this holding hopes to expand its activities, and one of its projects is launching more industrial parks focusing on knowledge-based production. Generally speaking, the number of industrial parks has increased by over 270-fold since the Islamic Revolution in 1979. Presently, there are over 1,000 industrial parks and zones scattered across the country. Over 830 of this total has been handed over to industrial units. That's all based on figures from the Ministry of Industry, Mining and Trade. All things considered, Iran's industrial zones have a bright and promising future while offering lucrative investment opportunities with big profits. The construction industry has continuously had a series of revolutions throughout history. Technological advancements have influenced the construction sector too, from durable concrete in ancient structures to smart windows that automatically open and close based on light exposure. Some materials evolved with time, others are new to the industry and address natural disasters while reflecting changing lifestyles and environmental values. Still, other materials are born out of a need to reduce construction costs. In a nutshell, structures and their materials are the building blocks of society and economic expansion. To understand the enormity of the construction industry, we visited the 22nd Annual International Building and Construction Exhibition in Tehran. Because the exhibition was sprawled over nearly 4 hectares of land, one day is not nearly enough for visitors to see the entire expo, so it ran for 3 days. This exhibition is one of the most important events in its industry. We caught up with a few companies at the exhibit to see what they were offering. Our first stop was at a booth held by a company that makes ceramic tiles. They also export their products to numerous countries. Next, we stopped by a company specializing in manufacturing faucets and kitchen and bathroom attachments. It also purchases most of its raw materials from inside the country. Like many we have seen at the event, this company has created many job opportunities directly and indirectly. Plus, it uses the latest machinery to make high-quality products that compete with foreign brands. Now, many might not think twice about it, but Iran's faucet and fixture production have been booming. So we spoke with another company that has been exporting these items for years.
Industry participants say this year's Building Expo was much larger than last year's, meaning that Iran's construction industry has expanded in recent years, displaying the country's various existing and emerging capabilities in the field. Statistics show that last year some 900 domestic companies participated in the events. Also, foreign companies were present, offering their goods and services.
This year's exhibit hosted hundreds of foreign companies from Germany, Australia, Turkey, China, Spain, Italy, South Korea, and Malaysia, just to name a few. A wealth of products were showcased at the expo, from road and construction equipment to stones, sanitary supplies, heating and cooling systems, lifts and elevators, and so much more. Rarely has any industry offered so much versatility and variety of products as the construction industry. Events like this one offer a platform for the exchange of ideas, examining markets and opportunities for collaboration to create new products needed in the market. Next, we stopped by a display for a company specializing in making various inset kitchen products. We asked them about their goods and approach to challenges posed by the US sanctions. Walking through the exhibit, we ran into a company that makes metal fittings for stairs, windows, and areas that require spatial separations.
All things considered, the construction sector has been significant for the Iranian economy. The sector is divided into 2 main parts: government infrastructure projects and the housing industry. The construction industry has been thriving due to national and international investment to the extent that it is now one of the largest in the West Asia region.
This sector suffered a lot after the US withdrew from the 2015 deal and reimposed sanctions against Iran. These measures choked construction materials imports. As a result, the steady flow of things like metals to Iran was seriously hampered and eventually halted altogether. But despite the bans, this industry continues to grow and is also one of the few that exports services to other countries. Based on the Association of Iranian Exports of Technical and Engineering Services, Iran currently has the potential to export engineering services worth $40 billion annually. The country already exports these services to countries around the Caspian Sea, its bordering neighbors, South and Central America, North Africa, and South Asia. Some construction projects include sewage treatment plants, dams, and energy plants. According to the Ministry of Industry, Mining, and Trade, Iran is self-sufficient in construction material production. Steel, glass, and cement are abundantly produced in the country. Moreover, the surplus of these items is exported to countries worldwide. Government officials say they have plans to expand exports to Iran's trade partners, including China and Russia. For example, the Ministry of Industry, Mine and Trade says it plans to sell upwards of $3 billion worth of construction materials to Russia alone. As a whole, the government views the construction sector as a feasible alternative for generating foreign revenues and diversifying the country's economy away from oil profits.
And now it's time for me to take a quick break and hand it over to my good friend out in the field who has prepared an exciting report for us.
In ancient Iran, felt was already used in the production of numerous kinds of clothing, bed clothes, floor carpets, and different kinds of sacks. In fact, the Iranian world may have been an important center for the development of felt technology. In the modern world today, felt or namat has found its way to industries of all kinds in various forms.
You just can't imagine how crowded this place is. Whenever I want to talk on the phone, I have to find a sign-up place to be able to talk to you. It's really crazy. God, in today's chaotic society, stress is an issue that many of us suffer from every day. But what matters most is trying to find the stress sources and try to find effective solutions. For this reason, today I'm here to tell you that I finally found a startup, a new innovative company that has finally found a solution to this disastrous problem. I won't tell you any further. Let's just go and check it out.
Felt, or so-called namat, is the acoustic solution for rowdy places to absorb and decrease undesirable noises. The aim is to provide sound serenity and to improve physical, mental, and psychological health. Namat Studio's scope of work is based on designing and manufacturing products. Recently, it has also played a significant role in different projects like some innovation centers in Asia and Africa. This company has focused on designing and building acoustic products. Generally in Iran, there is no specific competitor in this field. However, there are some groups in America and Northern Europe that are engaged with felt.
If I want to tell you about a history about how our company established, it goes back to 3 years ago when Diva was chosen to renovate the innovation factory of Iran, that was the biggest one in the time. And the designer tried to make the offices and they tried to design a place that the people be comfortable, have a good place to work. That's why we understand that we have some advantages and disadvantages. One of the disadvantages is about the sound pollution that we had in the this area, that places were noisy and the employees didn't like that. That's why we try to use special materials for control this sound pollution. And we reached the felt material and we try to use this material.
Designing acoustic and movable working stations with the aim of recycling old products and reuse them in different functions. What is worth noticing about this business is the fact that the problem-solution method is based upon three WH questions: why, how, and what.
Why is to define the problem? How is the process towards the solution? And what is the final product and prototype? These acoustic solutions were combined with architecture in various parts of the space and played the role in sound insulation and creating a silent space.
All right, now I want to walk you through some of the major products that are made of felt. The first piece we have here is an artwork that is made of wool felt that acts as a sound-absorbing material, not only as an aesthetic material that you can put it in your home place, but also as a sound-absorbing material. There is a phone booth. If I get inside, I can feel the private space and how the atmosphere really changes. It improves the acoustic vibes and reduces the reverberation when I get inside. And there's desk divider. It's actually one of the main products in this company. People and employees put it in their on their desk to divide their own workplace with the person right next to them.
We have three different kind of material that we use on our works that absorb undesirable sounds, which are wool panels, or the other name is felt, and in Persian we say namat, and thermofelt and carpet. And the felt are in two kind of industrial felt and the natural felt. Natural felt is made by wools, and industrial material is made by a process by the battles and pet materials. They have different color patterns and thicknesses. The thicknesses are from 3 millimeter to 50 millimeter. And about the thermofelt, we have this material that we can use for more absorption. It has three kind of material with polyester, jeans, and heavy traffic, and it's very good for absorbing. And the last one is the carpet that is heavy traffic that we use in heavy traffic places such as the offices, and it can be cleaned very easy by the vacuum cleaner.
As I mentioned earlier, this idea was created based on the concept of recreating, recycling, and revitalizing the surrounding substances, and finally, creating a comfortable, inviting atmosphere.
Just like linear lighting, almost everything here is made of felt. Based on environmental psychology, this linear lighting has been created in a way to provide maximum visual and acoustic comfort in the workplace, especially a co-working space like this company, Namad Startup, has been trying to promote sustainability and also take steps towards industrialization. Among all the products here, there were so many things, but I decided to choose this felt laptop case to carry my laptop with me wherever I go. So it's not about the ideas, it's about making the ideas happen. I'm in Sarah Dema.
We're almost near the end of our program, but before we go, let's take a look at some news and trends on industrial parks and other related traits. As the number of industrial parks in the country grows, so does the maintenance cost of these areas. Iran's Small Industries and Industrial Parks Organization, or ISIPO, says over half of these parks are in need of renovation.
The organization says around 60% of the country's industrial parks are over 15 years old and need maintenance and overhauls. Based on official figures, nearly 50,000 industrial units have started their activities in these parks. However, the ISIPO says it is limited in how much help it can provide these industrial areas to effectively maintain them. The organization says the government needs to give it more authority to do so. Iran's industrial parks play a critical role in making the country independent by boosting production in a bid to nullify the U.S.-imposed sanctions on the economy.
Summertime is usually the season where electricity consumption reaches its peak. But unfortunately, that's also when most power cuts happen. So Tehran province officials have now devised a solution to prevent blackouts in industrial parks.
After a brainstorming session, provincial officials have decided to set up several solar power stations to provide a steady supply of electrical power during peak use periods. The power stations will generate up to 1,200 megawatts of electricity for the country's power grid. Plus, these stations will help supply electricity to 19 of the province's industrial parks, where some 6,000 businesses are operating. This solution comes after the Energy Ministry devised a plan to systematically cut off electricity supply to industrial parks during peak use. This program aimed to manage the capital's electricity supply and prevent blackouts for household consumers.
And our last news topic covers Iran's deepening ties with its neighbor, Turkmenistan. The two countries have recently inked a memorandum of understanding.
Under the deal, Iran's ISIPO has agreed to share experience and transfer knowledge related to developing industrial parks to the Turkmen side. These include design, engineering, and consultations for setting up industrial towns in special economic zones. Other topics in the MOU include bolstering entrepreneurship and developing small industries and tech parks. The two sides also signed several other cooperation documents during a visit of Turkmenistan's president to Iran.
That wraps up our program for today. On behalf of the entire team, thank you for tuning in.
Ocean of Dua.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين Hello everyone, brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of the program, The Ocean of Dua. In this edition of the program, we'll have a glance at Kumail's supplication and we'll discuss a commentary on that. We'll be back in a few seconds, so stay tuned.
إلهي وسيدي فأسألك بالقدرة التي قدرتها وبالقضية التي حتمتها وحكمتها وغلبت من عليه أجريتها أن تهب لي في هذه الليلة وفي هذه الساعة كل جرم أجرمته وكل ذنب أذنبته
Dear listeners, as you were previously with us, you know, we have reached this excerpt of the Divine Kumail supplication in which the supplicant asks the Almighty Allah, beseeches Allah for repentance, and we go in the presence of Allah so that we would be forgiven, so that He would have mercy and regard and beneficence on every human being, on us, in this very night. إلهي وسيدي أسألك بالقدرة التي قدرتها. My Allah and my Master, so I ask you by the power you have apportioned. وبالقضية التي حتمتها وحكمتها. And the decision which you have determined and imposed. وغلبت من عليه أجريتها. Through which you have overcome him towards whom who has been put into effect, انتهب لي في هذه الليلة وفي هذه الساعة, that you forgive me in this night and at this hour, كل جرم أجرمته, every offense I have committed, وكل قبيح أسررته, every sin I have performed, وكل جهل عملته, every wicked thing I have concealed, كتمته أو أعلنته, every folly I have enacted, whether I have hidden it or announced it, أخفيته أو أظهرته, whether I have concealed it or manifested it. In the beginning of this Kumayas application, Imam Ali alayhi salam classifies the different sins and asks forgiveness for each of these classifications. اللهم اغفر لي الذنوب التي تهتك العصام. He asks Allah to forgive the sins that tear apart safeguards. الذنوب التي تنزل النقم. Those sins which draw down adversities. اللهم اغفر لي الذنوب التي تغير النعم. Those sins that alter the blessings. And then, اللهم اغفر لي الذنوب التي تحبس الدعاء. Oh Allah, forgive me the sins that hold back supplication. There are some factors that hinder the acceptance of supplications. Imam Sajjad alayhi salam considers 7 sins which prevent the acceptance of supplications by the Almighty. Bad intentions, hidden vices, hypocrisy with religious brothers, doubtfulness about the acceptance of supplications, postponing the prayers, leaving goodness and almsgiving, which make people close to Allah, and speaking rudely with people, using obscene words. One group of these sins are the hidden vices, vices such as mistrust, hatred, self-admiration, negligence, arrogance, stinginess and greed, and loving Allah's enemies are harmful sins. And these are the sins that avoid the acceptance of prayers, in addition to worldly and heavenly chastisement as well. Imam Baqir alayhi salam says about hypocrites, for example, بِئْسَ الْعَبْدُ عَبْدٌ هُمَزَةٌ لُمَزَةٌ يُقْبِلُ بِوَجْهٍ وَيُدْبِرُ بِآخَرٍ. A bad servant of Allah is the one who is a slanderer. On one side, he comes to befriend, on the other hand, he begins enmity. And these are those kinds of hidden vices that Imam Ali alayhi salam, again, in the ending parts of the Kumayas supplication, asks the Almighty Allah to forgive him for. كَتَمْتُهُ أَوْ أَعْلَنْتُهُ أَخْفَيْتُهُ أَوْ أَظْهَرْتُهُ. Whether I have hidden or announced it, or I have concealed it or manifested it.
I therefore implore you by the power which you determine, and by the decree which you have finalized and ordained, where you have prevailed, you have imposed it, to bestow upon me this night and this very hour the forgiveness for all the transgressions that I have been guilty of, for all the sins that I have committed, for all the ugly acts that I have kept secret, and for all the evils done by me, secretly or openly.
So good about all the things that we went through, knowing that God is pleased with us too. It's not a dream, this is so true. Feeling the peace all around, seeing things we can never imagine, hearing the sound of rivers flow. Indescribable, knowing that this is our reward.
ocean of dua.
So there are some sins that you do not see anything of the person, they are not visible, or they are hidden. And the most important sins of this class are self-admiration, hypocrisy, hatred, and arrogance, etc. For example, when humans are neglectful of the realities, they are easily deluded by material issues, which is an obscene and dangerous deed. Those who are deceived by the worldly wealth deny the fact that this world is transitory, that one day they would be placed in their graves, their bodies would be devoured by the insects, and their soul would be entangled by their wrongdoings in the purgatory and chastised in the hereafter. That is why Islam has warned the Muslims not to have those kinds of attributes that are hidden. For example, when it says خَصْلَتَنْ لَا تَجْتَمِعَانْ فِي مُسْلِمْ الْبُخْلُ وَسُوءُ الْخُلُقُ. A Muslim does not have two attributes, meanness and temper. This بُخْل is a kind of hidden vice that Almighty Allah warns us about. الْبَخِيلُ مَنْ بَخِلَ بِمَفْتَرَضَ اللَّهُ عَلَيْهِ. And they even try to expand the meaning of بُخْل. A stingy person is not the one who is only stingy about the material issues. You want to know the one who has the utmost level of stinginess, the one who is stingy and mean in doing what Almighty Allah has obliged him to do. Thank you, brothers and sisters, for staying with us in this episode. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also visit our website at parsetoday.com. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
I need you by my side. I wish to be close to you through half my life. Ya Allah, oh Allah, be with me all the way.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa. And FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.